Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's October the 17th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services. He's in Oakland, Illinois. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, the U.S. plans to appeal a WTO ruling issued against the reforms already made to the cotton subsidies. Tom Harkin has tweaked Dick Durbin's farm bill legislation for the Senate and presented it to the Agricultural Committee, and the European Biodiesel Board is not happy with the U.S. splash and dash export subsidies. It may take legal action against biofuels. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with these and many other ag news stories. And on the subject of biofuels, I'll update you on some work being done here on the University of Illinois campus that could drop a third row crop. That's the important word, row crop, into what I'm going to call your biofuels rotation. Corn, tropical maize, and soybeans. Then we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. That'll happen just after the bottom of the hour. And it all happens on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago, on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby December wheat at 820.5, down 8 cents. March futures at 840.75, down 6 and 3 quarters. And July at 664.25, down 3 and 3 quarters for the day. December corn futures, 358, 2.5 lower. The March at 374.5, down 2 and 3 quarters. May futures 385, down 2.5, and next year's December corn at $4.04, down 4.5 for the day. November beans, $9.74 a bushel, down 3.25. January at $9.93, down 3.75. And the March at $10.07, down 4 cents. November beans next year, 7.75 lower at $9.66. December bean meal futures at $2.74.90. They're a dollar lower for the day. January futures off $1.10 at $2.77.80. December bean oil off 8 cents at $40.15. January at $40.71 unchanged. Mercantile exchange numbers: October live cattle $95 even, down 25. December down 12.5 at 97.27.5. And the October feeder cattle at 112.75, down 42.5 cents. November at 45 lower, $112.75. The settlement price there for the Nov feeder cattle. December lean hogs at $57 even, down 72.5, and the February at $63.75, down 82.5. April futures $67.65 for the lean hogs, 35 cents lower. Outside markets, crude oil $87.25, down 36 cents at this hour. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 13.825, down 87 points for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Paul Cooley has been waiting patiently to join us to talk about today's trade. He's with us this afternoon on a Wednesday, as he always is. Hi, Paul, from ADM Investor Services.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Okay, so we probably have a lot of discussion that we need to take up fairly quickly. We've got some events on the calendar that we need to take up that happened in the past historically that are probably
important.
You
know, one thing it's only right to bring up that October 19th, 1987, several of the large financial networks have had documentaries about that big stock market crash. And, of course, three big points. I was there and watched it very well, and I was halfway bearish corn, soybeans, and wheat during that time frame. But it was a 500-point slide in the stock market, and the Federal Reserve, former Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan, said, you know, he was scared, too. They pushed the money supply. The amount of money that needed to be settled for at the mercantile S&P pit was $2.4 billion, and it did encourage more coordination of conversation between New York and Chicago. The system held, and it was a historic mark because of the volatility. And, of course, the stock market did come back in time, but it was a really a time that nobody will ever forget, and we're only 2 days away from that anniversary date. But the system worked, and that's the strength of the U.S. system.
And the 500-point drop was 18 or 20%. I don't recall how much that was, but we were at, what, 2150 or 2200 at the time, and we're at well over 13, close to 14,000 at this point. So it would have to be a pretty good drop.
It was a learning process, but it was the scary part of if anybody was there watching it happen, because it it created some financial strains, the system, to the fullest. But I was happy to find out that Alan Greenspan was scared, and he did. They did provide a lot of the money, and there was a couple of rulings that allowed companies to buy their stock back, and also the exchanges stayed open, and that was another important market function.
So as we take a look at that historical milepost, and you might bring it into today for us, where
we had a really lot of strength in the crude oil market of $89 a barrel, and of course the feeling is that with high crude oil prices, it puts a strain on the economic system with high priced fuel, economic slowdown, and things like that. And the crude oil did sell off late in the trading day, and the last tick I think I got was down, about 66 cents. And the stock market, of course, is trading a little lower at the present time, but nothing of any major consequence at this time.
And then turn your attention to the corn and the soybean and the wheat markets. You've been not so friendly to the corn and the wheat for some time. Have you turned around yet, or are you still thinking things are going to go down?
Well, you know, let's basically say a couple things here. You know, the 40-day moving average is at 354 and a quarter today, and the December corn closed at 358. Major flooding, a major price gyration in the crude oil market today, and the market did close lower. A couple things that we're basically thinking is that we do think the basis is going to improve. The general deal is there's major flooding, of course, in Iowa, 20 to 40 mile an hour winds, ground that's already very wet, and 1 to 3 inches of rain headed in there. So it's going to be a slow harvest, with Iowa on Monday 37% harvested. So we are going to have a corn crop that's going to be basically take a few weeks longer to get harvested. That was one of the big supportive factors in the marketplace, but the market still closed lower today.
Okay, so am I right that you're conflicted on this one, because you follow the 40-day pretty religiously, and usually that's where you get your trend from? So the trend is up in the corn, if you're above that. But you feel that there's an awful lot of weight in the marketplace.
Yeah, I do, and a couple of things. There is the 2 billion bushel corn carryover. We do get the feeling that it has been a tremendous amount of wheat planted in the world and in the U.S. People from customers from southern Illinois said they got their rain. The private weather people say there's more rain headed for the south half of the Boot Hill, the Delta, the southern half of Illinois tonight into Indiana. So it should get the soft red winter wheat crop off to a good start. The big factor here is that we have major piles of corn on the ground, and it's going to, with transportation costs, $4.10 corn or $4 futures looks a little high at this time. So we're going to have to digest this crop. And, with this triple stack hybrids that we're seeing, we do think that there will be some aggressiveness on planting corn. And, I got to send a congratulations. I understand the University of Illinois test plots at Champaign there had record corn yields, and that's a real tip of the hat towards farming ability there at the university.
No, you're one up on me. I haven't checked in on them, so I'll have to
also would like to ask the economics department there, Ag Econ department, if they sold it on the high.
Well, I'll check with Daryl and see.
Yeah, see if not only did we have a bin buster yield at the university, we want also a good price. So
well, we'd like to have that so we can keep operational budgets high, wouldn't we? So, and farmers would like to do the same thing. So I've got a secondary question, and we'll let you close out with this. When we're looking at no beans next year at 966 and a quarter, and we've got Dease corn for next year at 404 and a quarter, in particular the Dease corn at 404 and a quarter. Would you be a willing seller of next year's crop,
portion of it? We're getting a lot of questions about that, and we're looking at, you know, some level in that 420 level on the Dease corn and some level above $10. But the big factor is that people are basically not only talking about it, but they are lining up major lines of credit to defend their position, to take advantage of it. And they feel like that they do have to be a little better marketer, because we do think the world is going to push their accelerator pedal down clear to the floor on massive increase of corn, soybeans, and wheat production in the world. And all it takes is weather to make it happen. The positive thing is that maybe demand is improving some, but it's a little sluggish at this time.
Paul, we appreciate you being with us today.
Have a profitable day.
You too. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Wednesday afternoon. A quick look at the forecast for the two-state region. It says tonight, cloudy skies, windy with periods of showers and thunderstorms. A few storms may be severe. Lows from 60 in the north to 68 in the south. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, very windy, mild periods of showers and thunderstorms. A few storms may be severe. Highs tomorrow from 75 in the northwestern part of Illinois to 84 in the south. Dave Dickey will be here in a moment with all the day's agricultural news.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
In agricultural news, the U.S. says it will appeal a World Trade Organization ruling issued Monday that says the U.S. has not taken enough steps to reform its cotton program. If the U.S. loses its appeal, Brazil likely will seek $4 billion in trade sanctions against the U.S. and may also break patents held by U.S. companies. U.S. Agriculture Undersecretary Mark Keenum, who oversees crop subsidy and export programs, says he hopes the U.S. will prevail, despite repeated rulings in Brazil's favor. The WTO found that U.S. elimination of the Cotton Step 2 program did not go far enough to comply with reform requirements. The ruling comes as the Senate is set next week to consider Farm Bill 2007. Senate Agriculture Chairman Tom Harkin and Budget Committee Chairman Kent Conrad have reached agreement on allocation of money for each of the titles in the 2007 Farm Bill. Details are being released today. A Harkin aide says that Harkin's staff presented other committee members also a revision of the countercyclical revenue program proposed by Senate Majority Whip Dick Durbin of Illinois. The program would be called the Average Crop Revenue Program, and producers could decide each year beginning in 2010 if they want to opt for the new program. Sign up for disaster assistance for row crops began earlier this week. About $3 billion is available to producers who qualify. Producers who incurred qualifying losses in 2005, 2006, or 2007 must choose only 1 year to receive benefits. Farm Service Agency Deputy Administrator John Johnson.
We're going to be taking sign up for the quantity losses first, and then at a later date we'll have a sign up for quality losses. Congress in this legislation directed us to do quality differently than we've had in the past, and it's proved a little bit more challenging on software and other issues, and so it's going to take us a little bit longer to hold the sign up for quality.
Producers must have suffered quantity losses in excess of 35% to be eligible for CDP. The payment rate is set at 42% of the established price. The European Biodiesel Board is considering legal action if the U.S. does not curb biodiesel export subsidies, especially splash and dash tax credits. The EBB says foreign seed oil is often delivered to U.S. ports purely to collect the tax credit en route to Europe. Democrat presidential hopeful Barack Obama told Iowa producers yesterday that if elected, he would boost aid for smaller farms, expand the renewable fuels industry, and establish incentives for organic production. Obama called for a goal of producing 2 billion gallons of cellulosic ethanol by 2013. And experts speaking at the International Policy Council meeting in England say global food demand will double by 2050. The group projects world population will grow by 40% to around 9.1 billion people by 2050. Bob Thompson, agricultural policy expert at the University of Illinois, says, in his words, there is no way Asia or the Middle East will be self-sufficient in food. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your director of agricultural programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Dave and I'd like to thank the 129 agricultural supporters who pledged almost $15,000 in our just concluded fall membership drive. Your contributions helped us surpass our overall goal. And thanks to your generosity, WILL received more than $207,000 in pledges. A great big welcome aboard also goes to the 30 new agricultural friends of WILL. Meanwhile, if you did not get a chance to make a contribution, you can still do that online. Just go to our website at willpledge.org. Again, Dave and I thank you for making a great big difference. Well, up next, when University of Illinois crop scientist Fred Belo began growing tropical maize, that's a form of corn grown in the tropics, he was looking for some novel genes for the utilization of nitrogen fertilizer and was hoping to discover information that could be useful to American corn producers. Now, however, as you'll hear, it appears that tropical maize itself may prove to be the ultimate U.S. biofuels crop. Early results show that tropical maize, when grown in the Midwest, requires few crop inputs, like nitrogen fertilizer, chiefly because it does not produce many ears. It also is easier for farmers to integrate into their current operations than some other dedicated energy crops because it can be easily rotated with corn or soybeans and can be planted, cultivated, and harvested mostly with the same equipment U.S. farmers already have. And finally, tropical maize stalks are believed to require less processing than corn grain, corn stover, switchgrass, miscanthus, gigantus, and scores of other plants now being studied for biofuel production. What it does produce straight from the field with no processing, says University of Illinois research scientist Fred Belo, is 25% or more sugar in the forms of sucrose, fructose, and glucose.
One advantage of maize as a biofuel crop as opposed to miscanthus or switchgrass is that it stores sucrose in its stalk. The way the maize plant normally works is I make sucrose in the leaf today, I put it in the stalk sometime that night, and then I move it into the grain the next day. Now, if you don't have grain, then the stalk becomes the alternate reservoir for the storage of that sucrose.
The long dog days of the Midwestern summer postpones the development of ears on the tropical maize. The sugars, destined for the ear that won't have time to develop, are stored and harvested instead in the stalk. And Fred Belo believes those tropical maize plants without ears and concentrated amounts of easily processed sugars could have a dramatic effect on Midwestern production of ethanol and other biofuels.
Well, an advantage of sucrose or readily available sugars is they require way less processing. They can be used directly, both to make ethanol and potentially for other industrial purposes, even more valuable than ethanol. The molasses or other sugar products could fairly readily be extracted from the stalks of corn as well as sugar cane or sweet sorghum.
In this case, the corn is tropical maize. Fred Belo says Midwestern-grown tropical maize easily grows 14 or 15 feet tall, or about twice as tall as regular U.S. corn. That tall stalk, minus the ear, is the key to the available sugars. And the best news of all, should this variant of corn prove economically viable as an ethanol feedstock, is that it's just a row crop.
The tropical maize would, if I showed you the seed, you would grow it in a way that would be exactly like current maize. You would use the same planting equipment, the same herbicides, the same pest control. You'd grow it all in exactly the same way. It would look early on, you could not tell it was any different. The only reason you'd notice it is it would be awful tall and have very few ears.
The U of I's Fred Belo says in terms of biofuel production, tropical maize could be considered the sugar cane of the Midwest. Early trials show tropical maize requires much less nitrogen fertilizer than conventional corn, and that the stalks actually accumulate more sugar when less nitrogen is available. Nitrogen fertilizer is one of the major costs of growing corn. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. It's just about 27 minutes after the hour of 2 o'clock Central Time on a Wednesday afternoon. Time now to take a look at what's been happening in the world of the cash grain markets. And Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain joined us from Terre Haute, Indiana, as she does each and every Wednesday afternoon. Hi, Kay. How are you today?
I'm fine. And you, Todd?
I'm in a really good mood. Happy. We made our pledge fund goal this year of $200,000, the largest goal the radio station has ever had. And the farmers and agribusiness folks came through. We had 129 pledges from them, 30 of which were new. They raised more than $15,000 out of them, and that is a heck of a deal. We'd like to have more, always, kind of like a farmer. We'd like to have more, but it's been a good week for us so
that's
far.
That's a reason to be happy.
It's a good reason to be happy. How about down there? You've been able to make your way through the bulk of the harvest season?
It's been really tough here this week. We've done okay so far, but the bins are full, and so now then this last third of the crop that's out here is going to have to come to town, and we've had lines down the street. We loaded two corn trains back-to-back. We have two more moving, so it's really been a struggle, Todd, but we just have a heck of a corn crop around here, and prices are good, basis levels are improving, and the farmers are getting good prices, so I guess, and it's raining now, so they're probably happy to get a little break here.
I bet you are too, aren't you?
Oh, yes.
Well, tell me about old and new crop pricing for you and whether farmers are taking advantage of the current high prices. And I know we've had several down days, but of the current high prices in the marketplace, are they selling new crop as well as old crop?
They sold a lot more new crop when we were well over $4, so that's when they really hit it pretty hard. And, of course, I'm a firm believer that, this ethanol market's a little bit in trouble, and, you know, I think probably some of these prices should be locked in. They're maybe not doing as much as I would like, but, yeah, they have in the past when we got over $4 before sold some, and DP charges were a little more steep this year because we had such a carry in the market, so they've sold most of it over the scales. We have very little DP, so I think they've done a pretty good job of merchandising so far, Todd.
On the new crop, they haven't done as much as you'd like, so they're at what, 2 to 5%? You'd like them at 10 to 15, or you have some numbers in mind?
I'd like them at least 15, maybe even 20, just depending, you know, because, I mean, cash rent's going up and their input costs are going up. And, you know, when you look out here at these prices and you see some profit, it sure doesn't hurt to lock some in because these prices just have far exceeded anybody's expectations. And anything can happen, but with global demand the way it is, why, maybe they'll maintain their strength. We'll just have to wait and see.
Speaking of prices, what do you have for the day?
Our cash corn is $3.20, cash beans are $9.11, and new crop wheat is $5.79 today.
Well, enjoy your break and smile down there with the little rainfall.
Thank you very much, Todd.
All right, that's Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana, where it's raining this afternoon. Not raining yet here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, but probably expected sometime in the not-so-distant future. Speaking of distant future, we'll talk in 2 minutes, not-so-distant future, with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City about the agricultural weather. Your regional newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. The University of Illinois Police Training Institute has a new director, a month after the previous director resigned amid controversy. The U of I has named Crystal Fitzpatrick to lead the institute. She's currently the interim chief of the U of I Police Department on the Urbana campus. Fitzpatrick replaces Tom Dempsey, who left after it was revealed that Dempsey had signed a deal with the military security contractor Blackwater USA just before he went to work for the company. He worked for Blackwater while he was on leave from the U of I. Spokeswoman Robin Kaler says a search has been underway to find a new U of I police chief since late 2005. University trustees will also be asked to appoint the current dean of the U of I's College of Business to a vice presidency in charge of technology and economic development on all three campuses. Abhijit Ghosh would oversee the university's contributions to job creation and how the U of I capitalizes on the value of its research. The Illinois State Board of Education says 896 Illinois public schools failed to meet rising No Child Left Behind achievement targets last school year. Schools that receive federal poverty money but fail to reach the targets face a series of sanctions that ultimately could lead to state takeover or conversion to a charter school. A surgeon suspected in a string of deaths at the Veterans Affairs Hospital, where he worked until recently in Marion, Illinois, has now agreed to give up his Illinois medical license. The State Medical Disciplinary Board indefinitely suspended the license of Dr. Jose Vesaga Mendez during its meeting today. The head of the state's Division of Professional Regulation made it official by immediately signing the order. Vesaga Mendez agreed to the suspension as part of a deal with the state. He resigned from the VA hospital in Marion August 13th, and the hospital has suspended surgery since then. Last year, he also surrendered his medical license in Massachusetts. Repair crews have capped a leaking well that began spewing natural gas yesterday morning southwest of Lexington in McLean County. The leak happened when crews tried to fix a broken valve. NICOR spokesman Bernie Anderson says it was plugged today after emergency crews spent the night on the scene to make sure no one was in danger. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner. He's the senior agricultural meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Looks like we'll have some heady weather around for the next 24 hours or so.
Yeah, we have a little vigorous storm system moving across the plains and into the Midwest here at this hour, and that's going to continue to take place as we go through the day. This storm system is reminding us that it is autumn, and it's not still summertime. We are going to see a fairly sharp cold front that will come across the region. It is losing some of its support, though, as it moves eastward, but it won't do so before we have an opportunity for a little bit of wild weather overnight tonight or this afternoon and tonight. Risk of some severe thunderstorms possible across portions of the Midwest. Right now, it looks like heavy rain will fall across the northwestern Corn Belt, and that is an area of concern since the ground is so saturated up there anyway. This additional moisture will cause a great deal of runoff and some flooding, and we will see a continuation of standing water in some low-lying areas, so it might be a bit of a concern for some of the producers up there who still have a lot of field work in front of them. For the rest of the Midwest, the rain amounts aren't going to be quite so impressive, but enough to keep us out of the fields for a little while. This same storm system will also generate a considerable amount of wind in the upper parts of the Midwest. In fact, everybody will see a bunch of wind, I think, as the system pulls out of the region Thursday into Friday. But the strongest winds will be in the upper Midwest. Speeds up there will probably be 20 to 40 miles per hour and some stronger gusts. Not quite strong enough to cause a big concern over lodging potentials for the unharvested corn crop, but there may be a few weak stalks up there that might get knocked down a little bit from that wind. The rest of the Midwest will probably see wind speeds of 20 to maybe 30 miles per hour at times as we go through that Thursday-Friday time period. And finally, after that, we'll see a little bit of quieter weather across the region, less precipitation and less wind as well. The next frontal system to show up will be during the early to middle part of next week. It will bring us a little autumn chill into the air, maybe a little chance for some frost and freezes in some areas across the region, but not a lot of precipitation.
Well, we won't give the farmers in the northwestern Corn Belt your address because they won't be happy if they have to mud out downed corn at some point. That won't be any fun for them at all. What about the producers in South America? Will they be happier with you?
Oh, probably not. The situation in Brazil continues to be one that is a little bit on the dry side. There are some increase in shower activity currently being suggested by some of the computer forecast model data. I do think we will see an increase in precipitation. The question is, will it be enough to moisten the soil so the field work can move along more normally? My guess at the moment is that yes, in some areas, but in many other areas, we'll have to wait a little bit longer for greater amounts of rain. Southern Brazil's soybean production area is plenty moist. And in fact, some areas are probably a little bit too wet. But it's the north that the big concern is, because we have not gotten out and worked some of these fields in Mato Grosso, the nation's number one soybean-producing state. And it looks like they will have to wait a little while longer, although, like I said, some showers will come up here over this next week to 10 days that will help to improve the situation. But much, much more rain is going to have to fall before we see normal weather occur across that region.
Drew, we sure appreciate you being with us today.
Well, thank you for having me, and have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is the Senior Agricultural Meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and that is today's Closing Market Report. Join us tomorrow at 8:49 for our first look at the markets. And thanks for visiting willag.org. That's willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.